Good morning, Chicago. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Inflammatory bowel disease in cats. What a way to start a morning. Not so much, right? But it is a common issue. We'll talk with Dr. Brian Holub about that. And also coyote wild. Yeah, there are more reports right now of coyotes killing dogs and cats, especially out in those burbs, out in rural communities, and people are all up in arms. I'm not. I'm really not. It is easy enough to protect your pet, and I will explain how to do that. Dr. Dana Varbal is the Chief Veterinary Officer at the North American Veterinary Community, also a veterinarian right here in the Chicago area. A big shot, and she's right here in the Chicago area. Dr. Varbal, it's always good to talk to you. And, you know, one topic that I hear a lot about is diabetes. And in cats, I would argue that there's pretty much an epidemic, not too strong a word, of diabetes, and probably even more diabetes with every passing year in dogs, even though we're talking about literally two different types of diabetes. Would you, first of all, agree that it's on the rise?
It is. It's actually rising faster in pets than it is in people. And we know what a huge problem it is in human medicine as well. So we really are dealing with more cats, especially, but also more dogs diagnosed with diabetes each and every year.
Well, huge is the operative word when we're talking cats, correct?
Absolutely. We're talking more than 500,000 cats and dogs a year. That's a lot of pets that are affected by diabetes.
And when I meant huge, I meant overweight or obese cats, because that has something to do with all of this. In cats, and dogs is different, but in cats, am I right?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, one of the leading causes of diabetes in cats is obesity. Unfortunately, it's very similar to what we see with humans, where weight gain adds to insulin resistance and reduced insulin production. So it's multifactorial in cats, and that's what makes them especially challenging.
And in dogs, we're talking about a very severe problem, the same. It's still diabetes. Diabetes is diabetes, but it's a different type of diabetes, is it not?
It is. It's usually more similar to juvenile diabetes in humans, where actually for a variety of reasons, the pancreas stops producing insulin. So we can see some insulin resistance in dogs, similar to what we see in cats and people. But the dog diabetes that we typically see is a little bit different than juvenile, because it's usually adult onset. But for reasons we don't fully understand, the pancreas stops producing insulin. It's a slightly different disease process.
And it's thought, in some cases anyway, to be breed-specific, and genetics may have something to do with it, no matter what breed or mix it is. So it is thought, I believe. Now, what do you do about it? So you say to the client, your dog or your cat has diabetes, and then the client falls on the floor, because the client say, oh my gosh, I've got to deal with needles, and I've got to deal, you know, and I don't know how to measure all that. There's now good news, isn't there?
Well, you know, there is good news, and that's what I'm here to talk about, is there's been so many advances in human diabetes over the last few years, and it's really fascinating, because I know we've talked about this before, Steve, is that when we see things advance in human medicine, very quickly those advances spread down to veterinary medicine, and we're really enjoying some of the best advances in veterinary medicine in the treatment of diabetes, in both dogs and cats. And the exciting thing is that we have a lot of educational opportunities for veterinarians at NAVC to learn about diabetes. And they can bring those advances straight from our conferences and our virtual summits right to their clinics and right to you as the pet owners. And those advances have changed a lot. So that very overwhelming feeling of, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? How am I going to manage an animal that needs injections or glucose monitoring and pinpricks has really changed, and I'm really excited about some of those things.
Well, one of those things is the insulin itself. So 15 years ago, it was all sorts of different insulins that weren't specific for dogs and cats. But now there's a product called Prozinc. Actually, two. One, Prozinc for dogs, Prozinc for cats. And the cool thing is, I think, and you'll tell me medically if this makes sense, they are approved by the FDA for dogs or for cats.
Yes, actually, Prozinc is approved for both dogs and cats, and we've heard some great things from Boehringer Ingelheim about how that product can be dosed. So we used to always have to give insulin twice a day, and for cats, unfortunately, we had a few cats that just needed it three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've been able to find is they've actually been able to look at dosing regimens and develop a new regimen where dogs only need injections once a day, and cats we can usually get down to twice a day, which is a huge improvement for us as pet owners, because the less times we have to remember to give medication, the more consistent we can be, and the better diabetes can be managed.
Of course. So it's better management of the diabetes. I know studies have been done to show that. But above and beyond that, from a practical perspective, you know, mom may be busy, you know, working. And then if it's mom, it could be dad too, maybe busy working and then taking the kids to soccer and just life. Doing it three times a day and sometimes even twice a day can just be a challenge. I know I have friends that have had diabetic animals that just say, I can't go to the movies because I've got to be there to give an injection.
Yeah. And we found that if we can get down to once a day dosing, but even twice a day is a lot easier for most people. It's, you know, before you go to work in the morning, at dinner, at night,
mm-hmm.
it's usually very manageable with some very mild adjustments. You know, when we're looking at something where it's three times a day, it really becomes overwhelming. And if diabetes isn't properly managed, it can very quickly become life-threatening. So the easier that we make this, just the better it is all around.
Now, for cats, as in people, now you were talking about mm-hmm. how human medicine. So in cats, funded by what is now called the Every Cat Health Foundation, was once the Win Feline Foundation, there are monitors, little monitors the cats can wear, and it's a real thing now, is it not?
Absolutely. We were really excited to hear about this last year at our conference, VMX, and we'll have more education about it in the future. The wearable glucose monitors that came out for people were very quickly adapted to dogs and cats. And it's for cats because we know stress changes blood sugar levels in a normal cat, just your a completely normal cat. So for a diabetic cat, when they're in the clinic and they've been in the car and they're not used to being there, it's very hard to tell if that's the real, quote-unquote, blood sugar level
mm-hmm.
or if that's the stress talking. Well, it's so much easier for them to go to the vet, have a wearable glucose monitor applied, which is a very simple procedure, and then they can go home. And then it's as easy as the owner downloading an app on their smartphone and checking their blood sugar through a 24, 48-hour period. We're getting better data. We're managing diabetes better. And again, for cats and owners, it's just a little weekend project. It's really easy. And again, we've just seen so much improvement in so many ways we can modify both monitoring and treatment. It's going to become so much more successful. It's very exciting.
So let's say you change the diet. The cat that is overweight loses weight. The cat mm-hmm. exercises more as well to get the metabolism shifted. In addition to that, you're giving the appropriate insulin injections, maybe from Prozinc for cats, whatever mm-hmm. it might be, whatever your veterinarian says, some of those cats actually go into remission.
They do. We've actually seen some amazing responses. There's some really dedicated owners out there, and people love their pets, right? So we have some amazing dedicated owners that when they realize what has happened, maybe their cats gained weight, which is easy to do, and they kind of really dedicate themselves to, I'm going to do everything I can for my animals. We've even seen some cats that were able to get off insulin, kind of like people. Cats that are doing the right things, their owners are helping them lose weight, be more active. And it's great to see that we can see some cats that can really become basically in remission from diabetes for long periods of time.
Which is way cool. Talking to you is always
it
way
is.
Cool. Dr. Dana Varbal, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Dr. Brian Holub is the chief medical officer at VetCore. They have veterinary practices all over America. He's also on the board of directors of the Every Cat Health Foundation, previously known as the Win Feline Foundation. a longtime scientific advisor to both what is now Every Cat Health Foundation as well as the Canine Health Foundation. In fact, if your dog or cat is healthy, thank this guy, Dr. Brian Holub. It's always good to talk to you, sir. And I want to talk about the difference that the Win Feline Foundation, nonprofit funding cat health studies, has made, because you've been involved for decades, has made over the years. Now it's called the Every Cat Health Foundation.
Absolutely. Every Cat Health Foundation has touched the lives of virtually any cat who has ever been sick, from the mild to the very severe, and has been revolutionary and evolutionary in advancing the science, which has helped us learn and now be able to treat many diseases that in the past might have been considered untreatable.
Yeah, very, very well put. And one of those diseases that we now understand more about, in part because of the funding from the Every Cat Health Foundation, is what's called IBD, or inflammatory bowel disease, in cats. People get this too. So some folks might be familiar, but what is IBD in cats?
Well, IBD is a disorder of the gastrointestinal system, of the stomach, or the small intestine, or the large intestine, called the colon. And it is the parallel disease group that we see in humans that would be called Crohn's disease, mm-hmm. or ulcerative colitis, or Crohn's colitis. And it is a disease that's not an infection. It's a disease that's not a cancer. It's a disease that is rooted in inflammation. And the inflammation can be so severe as to be life-threatening.
What are some signs that cat parents should look for?
So there are three big symptoms, and these symptoms can be in many diseases. And some of the diseases that cause these symptoms can be mild. But the three symptoms we always watch for are inappetence / weight loss, so inappetence. Second one would be vomiting. And the third one would be diarrhea. And it's a building block diagnosis. You only need one of those for us to start thinking about it. If two of those show up, boy, it becomes more convincing. And if we see all three, we're even more convinced. But even all three can be a group of other diseases, so we need to carefully work through the diagnostic pathway.
And the most important question is, well, in part due to funding from the Every Cat Health Foundation, what can be done about it? Is it like, oh no, my cat's going to have diarrhea forever?
Well, Every Cat Health Foundation has been instrumental in funding research to let us understand this process. From 30 years ago, identifying a whole new set of inflammatory modulators, we now call leukotrienes. Those were discovered through research funded by the Win Foundation, all the way through how to diagnose and better diagnose and differentiate inflammatory bowel disease from cancer. Mm-hmm. And without that lion's share of research, we would be crippled in our ability to diagnose this disease. And diagnosis starts with blood tests, fecal examinations, and x-rays and ultrasounds, and ultimately progresses in our most severe cases to endoscopy, intestinal biopsies, and even occasionally full-thickness biopsies with laparoscopic or exploratory surgery.
So can anything be done? So let's say, you know, my cat's been diagnosed with this. Then now what? What is treatment?
So treatment can be highly successful, particularly the earlier the diagnosis is made. Treatment usually revolves around decreasing the inflammation. And some revolutionary research, also funded through the Every Cat Health Foundation, has shown us that early intervention and the use of diet change and probiotics can be very helpful and curbing the progression of disease. But if that escapes us, we usually move into medications that suppress the immune system, from simple medicines like prednisolone, which is cortisone, to less invasive medicines like metronidazole, to more invasive medicines for inflammatory bowel disease than cortisone. And we match the treatment to the severity of the disease and actually to the biopsies, because this disease can progress to cancer. And if we are detecting the disease closer to that leap to cancer, we become more aggressive. And so we may use not only prednisolone or cortisone, we may add to that other medicines, like Imuran, azathioprine, and other medicines to try to curtail the inflammation and stop the symptoms. And once controlled, we can back off of some of the more severe medicines until we can get a nice, controlled, comfortable cat that may very well and should live out their normal lifespan.
And, you know, and have a good quality of life as well. And even if it does transform into cancer, there are two possibilities. That's the small cell lymphoma or the large cell. And you don't want the large cell, but if it's the small cell, that can be treated and is often treated. I have a cat with one of those for many years without impacting quality of life at all.
Yeah, and sometimes the treatment of the small cell cancer can be a once-a-week pill that's given at home that can, in some cases, control that cancer with the highest quality of life. So even if it makes the leap to cancer, it still presents opportunities for successful treatment.
So all of these years, for many years, you can tell me how many years, you've been a scientific advisor to what's called now the Every Cat Health Foundation. What has impressed you more than anything else, and why stick with it as a volunteer for what is decades?
Well, the Healthy Cat Foundation has one vision, and they stay focused on that vision, does not get distracted, and has been a leader in our industry in this area, and that is to science. Focused on science, focused on advancing science with a very clear objective of improving the quality of life and the length of life for cats.
Well
it's
put.
It's simple.
Yep.
It's focused. And it's just essential to my industry, my veterinary industry, that we keep advancing our ability to understand, diagnose, and treat these horrible diseases.
Well, behind the scenes, my friend, I happen to know how instrumental you've been. Everycat.org to learn more. Dr. Brian Holub, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So the good news is the weather is warming, but the bad news is urban wildlife is out more than ever before. And not only urban wildlife, but rural wildlife as well. This is coyote season. If there is a coyote season, this is probably it. It's when the males and the females get together and do what they do and all of that. And they're out there. They're more visible than ever before. So are you concerned? And, you know, you ought to be. If you're leaving a small dog or a cat outside, you ought to be concerned if there are coyotes even periodically that come into your community. But you don't need to leave a small or mid-sized dog or cat outside, do you? You know, so simply walk the dog on leash or be out in the yard with your dog, no matter how big or small your dog is. If you're there, if you're right there, your dog is protected. Now, if there are a lot of coyotes and the coyotes happen to be brazen where you live, probably because people feed them and they're not afraid of people, just carry a whistle with you. Or I know people that have actually carried, they leave out a pot and pan, you know, in the and a spoon to hit it with in the backyard so they can make noise. And coyotes will run. It's called hazing. There's actually a name for it. And they'll run in the other direction. I know of very few coyotes that have come up to homes in Barrington and have said, let me see. And they ring the doorbell, ding dong, I'm here. And they walk into the house and they attack the cat. If the cats are indoors, the cats are safe. Now, I know for some of you, it is difficult to keep a cat that's always been an indoor, outdoor cat indoors. Provide lots of enrichment. Give it a shot. It'll protect your cat if there are coyotes out there. Because I will tell you, it is a serious threat, but one we can deal with. Listen, if people can live with lions in Africa, we can live with coyotes in Chicago. We'll talk to you next week on Steve Dale's Pet World, Bright and Early.